I'm JP Tuesday.
And I'm Kiki Cannon. As lifelong Disney fans, the work of countless talented Disney creatives have shaped our lives.
Now, as the Disney catalog expands, we're taking a journey through film and television to discover if that spark that shaped us as children lives on in adulthood.
Does your favorite Disney media still cast that same spell? Join us as we find out. We are
Rewatching the Magic. Hi, Kiki.
Quack. Quack. Quack.
Quack.
Hi, Tuesday.
Yeah, we talked about ducks last week. We're going to be talking about more ducks this week. But before we get to that, we do have some bit of news that we want to get through first. The big one, I guess, Disneyland Park is reopening on April 30th. Earlier this month, state of California announced, because of the vaccines going up and cases going down, amusement parks will be allowed to open as early as April 1st. Just a few days ago, right when everyone's stimulus check dropped, Disneyland announced that they will be reopening the park. That cannot be a coincidence.
You know that there was, like, somebody there, like, ready to hit tweet, like, the second. It's like, oh, it cleared their bank accounts. Tweet, tweet.
I still think it's a bit early. I would have waited for June, but Disney has always been about the money, and now that people have extra disposable income, Disney wants it to spend it there. Masks will be mandatory. It will be 15% capacity in the parks. And as far as I know from what I've been able to read, outdoor rides only.
Oh, huh. I did not hear that part. I still think it's a little too early. I wish that what they would do would be that you have to present proof of vaccination when you get there. Like, you can buy your tickets, but, like, when you get to the park, you need to be in the fully vaccinated camp. Mm. Things are still worth doing, even if they don't 100% solve the problem. That's the point of vaccination anyway. Is it 100% bulletproof? Absolutely not. Is it better than nothing? Absolutely yes. Get vaccinated.
Yeah, that is the official word from us at Rewatching the Magic. Get vaccinated if you can, please.
Yeah, we totally understand if there is a legit medical reason, you know, absolutely. That's why we're getting vaccinated. We're here to protect you. But, you know, if you're just like, I don't trust it, I don't, my freedom, like, shut up and get vaccinated.
Well, for the last year, we've seen people refuse to do the bare minimum to help their fellow man.
And we're sick of it. That is also the official position of yes. Rewatching the Magic. We're sick of your selfishness.
From what I understand, it's also going to be just for California residents.
They are opening Disneyland just for California residents. Florida is Florida, so, but at least California is being slightly smarter about it.
But yeah, if you are a California resident and hopefully you've been fully vaccinated, sure, people are going to do whatever they want anyway.
I know that the cast members are eager to get back.
To work, yeah.
Yeah, and I feel for them. You know, I want to see these people thriving and back to doing the work that they love. So, you know, do the right thing. Help those people out. Come on. Get vaccinated. Anyway, we've ranted about that for a while.
Yeah, the second piece of news that I wanted to get through was Disney has announced all of the titles coming to Disney Plus in the month of April, and a lot of rare Star Wars media is hitting the network April 2nd, so Star Wars Day is coming a bit early. So we're getting the Genndy Tartakovsky version of Star Wars Clone Wars. That is the animated miniseries from 2008. We're getting both Ewok movies, Caravan of Courage and Battle for Endor. The Ewoks cartoon. And something that we've reviewed in the past, the story of the faithful Wookiee, a.k.a. the Boba Fett cartoon from the Star Wars Holiday Special.
The first time that anything from the Star Wars Holiday Special is going to be officially available.
Yeah, so yeah, if you want to know our thoughts on the Boba Fett cartoon, go back to November and listen to our episode on the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Yeah, too long, didn't listen, we liked it.
Yeah. where's the droids cartoon? Come on,
yeah,
Disney.
The droids cartoon has not been in that list, which I thought was interesting. But maybe they do not have a clear enough copy.
You would think Lucasfilm would have all of that, you know? But who knows?
You know, with what Lucas did to stuff over the years, I'm kind of surprised any of it survived. So
I'm, again, surprised we're getting this little bit of the holiday special, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get to our main feature here, the Mighty Ducks. You know, it's not... Yeah, you could talk about your Falcon and Winter Soldier. We all know that everyone is looking forward to Mighty Ducks Game Changers, and I cannot say that with a straight face. I know there are millions of Mighty Ducks fans. Again, I'm the Mighty Ducks fan too, but to say you're looking more forward to this series based off the Mighty Ducks than the anything from Marvel, especially after WandaVision, you're... no offense, but yeah, I'm looking forward to Falcon and Winter Soldier more.
You know what? Even though I'm with you on that in my personal taste, I kind of love the idea that there's like five people out there who just have a room filled with Mighty Ducks memorabilia who are just the most thrilled five people on the planet. Being a fan of some pretty niche fandoms where I'm, like, one of only, like, four people who actually gives a crap. Shout out to all my Mighty Magiswords fans.
Yeah.
I'm always thrilled when somebody in a niche fandom kind of gets their thing, you know? So if you're one of those five people sitting in a room full of Mighty Duck stuff and you found our podcast, I'm rooting for you, you know?
Yeah, and the fact that they're getting Emilio Estevez to come back for this series. Granted, he's kind of transitioned to be more of a director-producer rather than an actor. To have him step back in front of the camera for this show, kudos to Disney for doing that.
Yeah.
So yeah, in the new show, the Ducks have kind of flipped the script. And they have always been known as the underdogs. And in the new show, they pretty much... have become what this movie has with the Hawks. They're the top team in the league, and all of the rich families want their kids playing for the Ducks, and if you're not a lifer from age 8, they don't want you. So the underdogs have to form their own team, which, so it's pretty much the new show is going to be this movie in reverse.
I mean, it's an interesting twist on it.
You know, you can only be the underdog for so long while you're the world champion Olympic team.
Oh man, did they finally make it to that. I will be totally honest up front. I saw the Mighty Ducks in theaters, and then I have not really thought about it as a thing until I had to rewatch it for this.
So for you know, quick, for those of you who haven't seen any of the movies, in this one there, that's the Pee Wee hockey team, local team. By the time you get to Mighty Ducks 2, they're going to the Junior Goodwill game, so they're essentially in the Olympics. And by Mighty Ducks 3, they're like challenging the varsity hockey team at an elite high school. There's only so many times you can be the Cubs before you become the Yankees.
You know, they name check Karate Kid in this first film, which made me actually quote Mystery Science Theater at them, which is, don't quote a good movie inside your crappy movie.
And honestly, but, Game Changers is pretty much Cobra Kai.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. It does seem like that. Like, Cobra Kai is all like, well, Daniel was the underdog, but now he's the slick car-selling champion guy. Yeah, it seems like Disney is just like, hey, you know that, like, tiny little thing somebody else did? We're gonna up that to 11. Anyway.
There was the three films. It became a franchise. There was the cartoon, the Mighty Ducks cartoon, which had nothing to do with the movie.
And was about actual ducks.
And there is an actual real-life NHL hockey team, the Anaheim Ducks, which at one point was owned by Disney. It is not owned by Disney anymore. This definitely falls into what we've talked about previously as the kid power era of filming.
Oh, yeah.
For those of you who don't know, like, we kind of talked about this starting with Home Alone, where there were movies that where the kids were the main focus of the film.
This one, I will argue, is a bit of a hybrid.
Yeah.
Because Emilio Estevez is, like, super in this movie, but also he has to learn from the kids and the kids have to teach him stuff. You know, it's a more symbiotic relationship than most kid power movies we talk about, but I would still say it counts.
But also, another thing from our childhood, that there were a lot of sports movies when we were kids.
Oh, so many sports movies.
Like, and all, a lot of them were underdog stories. So you have the sports underdog story and the kid power story all smashed together in this movie.
The reason I particularly don't go in for sports movies, like, they're not my typical genre. I like a few of them, but not many, is this is the most formulaic genre I can think of. Because it always has the exact same plot. Every sports movie is like, we're an underdog, but we have a quirky way of looking at sport. Now we are starting to win. Now we are the champions. Go us. Like, that is every single sports movie. That formula was so hammered in that you're basically just going to see, like, can they work in a joke in the middle of this, like, absolutely formulaic story? So, let's see if the Mighty Ducks managed to do that.
So, yeah, I mean, the first one I ever remember seeing of this was, like, Major League, which also stars the brother of someone in this movie.
I grew up loving the film The Cutting Edge, which was about a hockey player who had to become a figure skater.
I think I've heard of that.
It's actually a pretty good movie. Once again, rather formulaic, but there's just enough variance in the formula that I actually liked it. It's one of the few kind of sports-ish themed movies, because it's actually about a sport that I like and watch and wanted to participate in as a kid.
And we mentioned the NHL Anaheim Ducks. This movie features an NHL team that kind of doesn't exist anymore, the Minnesota North Stars.
Oh, do they not?
The Minnesota North Stars disbanded in 1993, 1 year after this movie came out.
Wow. Maybe that's why they had to start the Anaheim Ducks. They were like, oh, crap, we killed an NHL franchise.
Yeah.
We better repay that debt.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Hey, it's me editing the show. The Minnesota North Stars did, in fact, move to Dallas, and they are now the Dallas Stars, but the Minnesota North Stars still no longer exist.
Now, back to our show.
All right, let's get into the movie.
We gotta do a quick rundown of the cast. This cast is huge. I am not gonna talk about most of them. A lot of the kids that were in this movie did the Mighty Ducks franchise and not really anything else of note. So, if I don't talk about them, that's probably where they fall into. Even the love interest for Emilio Estevez in this movie, she did basically the Mighty Ducks and not really anything else. She has, like, 5 credits on IMDb. We've already talked about Emilio Estevez.
Actor's a legend.
Brat Pack!
Yeah.
I mean, that's all you really need to say. I mean, the Brat Pack ruled the 1980s. This was him coming off of the Brat Pack. It was one of his first movies that he really did that was not Brat Pack. Breakfast Club, St. Elmo's Fire, all that.
One thing I have to give the man credit for, and as a Latino myself, the fact that he did not change his name like his brother and father did, Charlie Sheen and Martin Sheen, he was proud of his Latino heritage and mostly kept his name, Emilio Estevez, because he liked the fact that his name had alliteration.
Yeah, and I have always liked that. But you know what? I think that Emilio Estevez is most important because he is, of course, the nephew of Joe Estevez. And yes, I am bringing Soul Taker into this. Try and stop me. I'm sorry, I freaking love Soul Taker. I am that sort of Mystery Science Theater fan. It's like, yep, no, card-carrying member of the Joe Estevez.
I mean, he could have easily been Eric Sheen and wrote his father's name, but he became Emilio Estevez.
It's interesting because for the longest time, we didn't know the connection as far as just fans.
Yeah.
Like, unless you were really into, like, reading teen magazines or whatever, where it might be like, and hey, did you know that he's also the son of Martin Sheen? Then it wasn't really, like, a super known thing. I don't think I knew it until, like, mid to late 90s when I started watching, like, you know, Entertainment Tonight or whatever, and it came up. At the time, Emilio looked nothing like his dad. Like, if you look at him in the 80s and 90s, you're like, that looks nothing like Martin Sheen. If you look at Emilio now, yeah, Emilio Estevez now, he looks exactly, he's the spitting image of Martin Sheen. So, way more than Charlie. Moving on. So, we have a kind of a weird one here, playing Hans, the guy who is the mentor or something. We have Joss Ackland, who is probably most famous for being the very first person in the role of Juan Perón in Evita. People in our generation, though, probably know him from Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. Moving on, as the rival coach of the Hawks, we have Lane Smith, who I was a huge fan of his career. He showed up in the miniseries V. He was also Perry White in Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman. His final film appearance was actually in a film that was filmed about an hour away from me, The Legend of Bagger Vance. We have in another one of the adult roles as Mr. Ducksworth, the guy that gives the ducks their name. We have Joseph Sommer. He was another kind of character actor that shows up in a lot of stuff. He was in the original Stepford Wives. He was in Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And interestingly, one of his most recent film roles was in X-Men The Last Stand, where he played the president. Moving into some of the kids that were in there, like I said, most of the kids in this movie, they did this series and that was it, but there are a few notable exceptions that have gone on to do other things. Probably the most famous of the bunch is Joshua Jackson, who plays Charlie, kind of the main kid who Emilio starts dating his mom. Possibly best known to our generation as Pacey in Dawson's Creek.
Team Pacey or Team Dawson? That was the bit before there was anything.
Yeah, before Twilight, you know, there was, you know, and yes, I was Team Pacey. then he went on to do the TV show Fringe, which I rather liked and thought was underrated. He's really good in this movie, although he really does not look like himself. Very, very different. He really long-bottomed. Like,
not until Mighty Ducks 3, where he actually starts looking like the Joshua Jackson everyone knows.
Yeah, but like when he was a kid, it was like, oh, you know, that's a weird-looking kid. And by the time he hit adulthood, you're like, oh, okay. We all had that awkward phase. It's fine. Some of us never grew out of it. So, moving on, we have Brandon Adams. He plays Jesse Hall. He is also Kenny in The Sandlot. Most recently, I think, in his kind of career, he did the voice of Rye in Kingdom Hearts 2. As Fulton Reed, the kind of ringer that they get in and teach how to skate, we have Eldon Henson, probably best known now as Foggy Nelson in the Daredevil TV series for Netflix.
It's funny that he plays a hockey player coached by a lawyer, and then his other most well-known role is playing a lawyer.
And he did really, really well in that show. I really liked his portrayal of Foggy. It was one of my favorite parts of the Daredevil series. He also shows up as Pollux in the Hunger Games series. He's in Mockingjay Part 1 and 2. So we have, as not the girl.
One of the girls.
But one of the girls.
She's the one with the most lines in the movie, though.
Yeah, Connie. Marguerite Moreau. She's probably best known now as having been in Wet Hot American Summer. But she also showed up on a lot of late 90s or early 2000s TV series, Smallville and Lost and The O.C. and also Jesse in Queen of the Damned. We have one of the most recognizable kids of the 90s in this film. Danny Tamborelli, who was Little Pete in The Adventures of Pete and Pete. And he was also the voice of Arnold in The Magic School Bus. If you were around in the 90s and you remember a very small redheaded boy that was in everything, that was Danny Tamborelli. And kind of the final one, and I saved this for last because it's kind of, it, as of, you know, two years ago, it became kind of awkward to talk about. As the younger of the Hall brothers, Terry, we have Jussie Smollett. He became absolutely, you know, as a kid, he did Mighty Ducks. He also did the movie North. And then he showed up again as an adult on the TV show Empire and absolutely took off. And then, as many of you may remember, he hit the news again because he claimed that he was a victim of a hate crime, that he was assaulted by a couple of white men in Chicago, I believe. You know, he came out and he kind of made a whole big thing about it. And then it came out that he had hired the two men to, you know, fake the assault. He's still claiming that he didn't do it, but the court system has kind of been like, you know what? Yeah, we've got a lot of evidence that you did it. So, it's still technically alleged, I think, rather than convicted of anything, but it's really harmed his career, and I don't know if he's going to get it back, unfortunately. It's one of those wait and see. And one last person we're going to talk about is the writer-director of this, Stephen Brill. He is best known for working with Adam Sandler. He did Little Nicky, Mr. Deeds. The reason why a lot of these kids were in Heavyweights is because he also did Heavyweights.
Ah, that explains it.
He shows up as cameo in the Wedding Singer, and he did some stuff with Judd Apatow. He's that kind of guy. He's that Adam Sandler, Judd Apatow-y kind of comedy, which you either like or you don't. Some of the stuff he's worked on that I like, some of the stuff, eh. Interestingly, he had a bit of a weird controversy where he was brought in to do reshoots on a film called Fanboys, which was about a group of people trying to break into Skywalker Ranch to see The Phantom Menace before it ever came out. And originally in the film, the reason they did this was that one of the members of their friend group had cancer and was expected to die before the film premiered. And as a big Star Wars fan, wanted to see the film. Interestingly enough, that exact scenario played out for at least one fan when the most recent trilogy was airing, and Disney actually made some concessions to, like, show that guy and his family an early screening before he unfortunately did pass on. But Harvey Weinstein, who I hate having to say his name, decided to redo the film and take out the depressing cancer plot. At which point it kind of becomes a movie about a group of people who get drunk one night and just decide to break into Skywalker Ranch for no reason. Like, it's just like, we're fans, we want to see the movie early. It's like, there's no emotional core to it at that point. So, finding out it was being reshot and that was being taken out kind of angered the fans, because then they kind of felt like it just made all Star Wars fans look like, you know, douchey, entitled brats. And some of them are. Stephen Brill, unfortunately, did not react well to this and started calling Star Wars fans losers and awful, and, you know, it was a whole thing. But, yeah, if you watch The Mighty Ducks and you want to know, like, why is this the way it is, Stephen Brill, That's why it is the way it is, for better or worse. Speaking of the way it is for better or worse, let's get into the plot before my eyeballs leak out of my eyes.
All right, so the main... when you're a kid, you're really focusing on the kids in this movie, but this is really the story of Gordon Bombay. So Gordon Bombay, as we see in the opening scene of the movie, used to play peewee hockey for the top team in the city, the Hawks. The opening scene shows the final shootout of the championship game where Gordon misses the shot, costing his team the game.
And his coach is awful. Like, over the opening credits, we actually hear the coach, like...
If you let me down, you let the whole team down. The only way to, you know, you gotta win. Winning is the most important thing. He's one of those coaches.
Yeah.
Anyone who's ever played sports has had that coach at one point in their life.
He's a real Richard.
Yes, real Richard. And it's such a stereotype in these sports movies of the coach that's only focused on winning.
Yeah.
So we fast forward 20 years to 1992, as Gordon Bombay has become a lawyer, and a very shrill lawyer. A lawyer that fights dirty and wins his court cases, whether it's...
ethical or not.
Ethical or not, he will win his court cases.
Yeah, he's shown jerking around the judge almost immediately. You know, like, he's got his little aside with his client. He's like, I don't really have anything to tell you. I just like making the judge wait because it makes me in charge instead of the judge. You know, he's that guy.
Yeah. And he wins his case, which he says is his 30th successful case since becoming a lawyer. Although they do say, well, technically you lost one. I didn't lose that one. I slept with so-and-so, so that consider that a win.
Yeah, he's also that guy.
So to celebrate said 30th successful case, he does what any responsible adult does, wink, wink, and goes drinking and driving.
Don't drink and drive, kids. I mean, don't drink, kids. But if you're an adult, don't drink and drive.
He is pulled over by the cops.
He smarts off to the cops.
And that gets him further in trouble. And he is back in court with the same lawyer and the same judge who now are getting revenge on him for being a smartass in the previous case.
Yeah, the prosecutor refuses to make a deal because he hates Gordon. The judge also hates Gordon. They're ready to throw the book at him, but Duckworth steps in and is like, hey, you know, he's a good lawyer. He just needs to be taught a lesson. So give him community service instead, and I'll suspend him from my firm if you'll do that. And they're like, oh, several months at least not having to see this absolute, another absolute Richard. Then cool, we're down with it.
To teach Gordon teamwork and humility.
Here is my first problem with this movie. Nothing about this seems realistic to me. There is no high-powered law firm in the world that's gonna sideline a 30-and-0 lawyer, or even a 30-and-1 lawyer, for a
DUI.
A DUI. They're not gonna care if he plays fair. If you care about playing fair, you are a public defender. The type of firm he's shown to be working for, no. You're a lawyer who wins. We're going to get this DUI swept under the rug. We're going to move on like nothing happened. When I complained about this, I was reminded in my household that this is a movie for 14-year-old boys, and this is what 14-year-old boys think business is. And I wanted to say, like, well, it wasn't written by a 14-year-old boy, but given Stephen Brill's other work, it probably is written by somebody with the mentality of a 14-year-old boy.
It's also a Disney movie. Like, this is not a Touchtone movie. This is Disney. If yeah, this was Touchtone, it'd be a different brand. Story. Yeah. And honestly, side note on that one, for a Disney movie, this gets pretty blue.
It's definitely for older teenagers. 12 to maybe 16-year-old boys seem to be the target demographic here. I'm not sure that some of the things in this movie would play now. I'm not sure that they would have Gordon, the lovable, eventually lovable coach of a kids' peewee hockey team, be a drunk driver. Like, ever now, if they were doing it. But, you know.
Let's talk about the introduction to the kids. Again, this is a Disney movie that has the kids pulling a prank where they're putting dog poop into a purse as a prank so someone could take the purse, think it has money in it, and then, hey, you have a purse full of dog poop.
Yeah, they pull a lot of weird minorly destructive pranks in the first part of this movie when we're getting the introduction to the team. And there is a lot of very bizarre directing choices where they do, like, the sped-up footage and the,
sound
like,
effects,
ha-ha.
Yeah.
You know, wacky sound effects, the, like, ha-ha, the adult fell in dirt. Go, kids. Kids rule, you know. It really does come across less like the rest of the movie and more like we had a weird ad break where they're going to try to sell me fruit by the foot.
Somebody saw Home Alone and said we can do it better with more kids.
But only for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And with a weird speed up film effect. I mean, really, that chunk of the movie looks like nothing else in the film. The comedy is like nothing else in the film. It is a weird short that is dropped in the middle of the film.
It's supposed to, I mean, I get what it's trying to do. It's supposed to show that these are not squeaky clean kids. These are kids that cause problems.
And they're also underfunded. And they play on a frozen pond in a park instead of inside on rink with, like, zambonied ice and stuff.
As Gordon will later say in the movie, old issues of the Inquirer as pads.
Yeah, they're, like, literally stuffing magazines and newspapers and stuff in their pants to be padding. Which leads to the one kind of interesting note about the goalie. Which is that the goalie is absolutely terrified of the puck. He's an awful goalie because he won't actually block the puck because it hurts. We find out later that it's because he's actually not wearing padding under there. It kind of looks like he does, but they kind of play it off as like, well, he's a larger kid and that was just natural padding and not like actual protective padding.
So yeah, we get the introduction of Bombay to the kids and there's a nice little moment where they think he's a drug dealer because he's coming in a suit. In a limousine to this very urban area.
And he's driving out on the ice like a psychopath.
Yeah.
I mean, he claims later, like, I know the ice is stable and stuff, but it's like, never drive a car out onto ice like that.
And we get, if you're not from Minnesota, you're not gonna know what it means, but the phrase cake eater is said a lot in this movie. Generally meaning rich person. Basically, they're rich enough to have their cake and eat it too.
I am so glad you mentioned that because I thought it was the most bizarre part of the movie.
For the amount of times you and I have been to Minnesota.
Yeah, and we've got like tons of friends from Minnesota. I have never heard this outside of this film. The older of the hall boys tries to act tough and like, nah, this is my hood, you get out, and we don't want any of your poison or whatever. And then Gordon does a weird thing where he makes the kids think he's gonna pull a gun on them, which, not cool, dude.
There's that classic line from this movie that actually gets repeated in the trailer for the new show. I hate hockey and I don't like kids. So it's him just being a Richard, as it were, to these kids.
Yeah, I mean, I feel him on that line, but I'm still not going to be a jerk to children, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, this is a 90s movie when they quote SNL.
I also wanted to talk about this. One of the kids, his entire personality is just quoting the copier guy.
The Pinkmeister! Mr. Rabble-Rouser! Back in the fuck over to Jesse Rooney!
The Tom Man making copies. The Tomster, Tomaruski. The Tom Meister.
Which is a joke that by the time this movie came out was already played out. I mean, the only people that could find it funny were like 13-year-old kids because they were the only ones that the joke was still kind of fresh to because we were of that age where you had to kind of like stay up late and sneak around to watch Saturday Night Live because it was still a little adult for you.
Maybe that's why the one writer ends up working with Adam Sandler. He really, really likes Rob Schneider.
I guess. if you were not watching SNL at the time and you're like a little bit younger and you weren't, you don't remember when everybody talked like that at your school, this makes no sense. It's just another thing that will make no sense to you because it's very much of that time.
But these kids stink. They cannot play hockey to save their lives.
Yeah, they're there to skate around and kind of hit at each other with sticks. That's about it.
To which Gordon is done, goes back into the limo. The kids rumble on the limo and want a ride, and he eventually gets him a ride on the ice just to shut him up. And as you said, don't drive on the ice because here comes Mom. Charlie's mom is upset, furious that someone would drive a car on a limo. Frozen pond. A limo on a frozen pond. These are our love interests, people.
Yeah, this is possibly the worst meet cute ever. She's just like, you put my child in danger of death. And he's like, you're kind of cute.
So let's kind of skip over to their first game as coach and team against the reigning champions, the Hawks, of which Gordon was once a member of the team.
And his old Richard of a coach, Jack Riley.
Still coach there. Riley,
still there, still being awful to children.
Points out the second place banner on the wall. Man, I wish they'd take that down. That's you. That was you, boy. That was you who did that.
Yeah, and Lane Smith plays this really well. When he plays an unlikable guy, he is absolutely the worst. And I love him for it. He was an amazing villain when he got to do a turn.
And we get another flashback to why Gordon missed the shot. Apparently, Gordon's father had recently passed away around this time, so Gordon wasn't focused on the game at the time.
Understandable.
But, of course, his Richard of a coach doesn't really take that as an excuse. You win, you win or... You're not part of the team anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We find out later that this Pee Wee hockey team is actually a feeder into the minor leagues and eventually the NHL.
We see later, one of Gordon's ex teammates when he was a kid is actually a member of the NHL, and they actually had an actual NHL hockey player, Basil McRae of at the time Minnesota North Stars said, hey, we used to be in the same team together.
Yeah. And so you don't really understand it at this point in the movie, but later in the movie, you understand that this shot was the difference probably between him becoming a professional hockey player and him ending up a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
This one shot when he was like 12.
Yeah, much like the new series, if you're not ready to go pro by 8, don't even try.
Yeah.
So yeah, and we instantly see the differences between the professional-ish hockey team and the Hawks with the professional pads and the big skating rink and the
slick jerseys and their own logo, and I mean, yeah, it's. Yeah.
Meanwhile, we get the Ducks with other teams' jerseys on, hoodies and whatnot. Their names are written in Sharpie marker on him, football helmets rather than actual hockey helmets.
At one point, this is the game, I believe, where the one kid takes one to the helmet and the helmet actually just crumbles in.
That is later in the film.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Because I thought it was at the beginning to show like how crap their equipment was. But
it wouldn't make sense here, though.
Yeah.
But that's after they get good. And yeah, again, Mr. Annoying Kid here doing the, hey, better, 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 swing, better. Again, quoting a more popular movie in Ferris Bueller.
Hum, better, 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 hum, better, better, hum, better, better, hey, better, better, hey, better, better, swing, better, 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 hum, better, better, hum, better.
Hey, better, 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 swing, better. Hey, better, 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 swing, better. Kennedy, 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 swing, better.
I'm just thinking that this kid just likes 80s-era comedies.
Maybe. He was probably thrilled to work with Emilio. He's probably like, oh my god, I love the Breakfast Club.
The short version of it, the District 5 team here gets creamed.
I mean, badly, too.
Yeah.
And we see that the Hawks are not afraid to straight up target and injure other players.
Yeah, they play dirty, which shows where Gordon gets his play dirty mentality from.
And Gordon immediately decides, if they're going to play dirty, we're going to play dirtier. And instead of teaching the kids to get good, he teaches them to fake injuries and get penalties.
Take the fall, act hurt.
Get indignant.
And as this is happening, we see Hans kind of giving a disapproving look to Gordon as all of this is happening.
This is the part of the movie where we really get Hans, and I'm going to say, Hans makes no freaking sense. Who the heck is Hans? The movie never says he's the mentor, but like all the people writing about the movie kind of are like, oh, it's his old mentor or whatever. He's the guy that owns the sports equipment store that I guess was like a friend of Gordon's family or whatever, but he's like really invested in Pee Wee hockey, which is bizarre. Like
it's probably his cause of all of his sales is selling to these teams.
Maybe, but like, I don't know. I don't know that many businesses that are like, you know, my local comic book store doesn't like keep track of like, oh, did you just get a raise at work? Like, you know, that would also be good for their business, but that would be creepy. You know, like, I'm saying that Hans is a bit creepy. I'm not saying that he's nefarious. It's just odd.
So we see Gordon coming through the back door of the store saying, hey, you used to do that when you were a kid just to get into the equipment. So it's like, these two know each other. It's their way of, maybe they should have filmed a flashback sequence of the father and Hans and Gordon together. All we get is this really bad Photoshop picture.
Yeah, and I'm gonna say I would have liked that, like, if Hans had been like, I was your dad's best friend and I promised him I'd, you know, look after you, you know, when he died and stuff. That would have made sense. All I need is one line. One line establishing why these two are so close, other than that's the guy who owns the store I buy my hockey equipment from.
But it seems more like disapproving of the fact that Gordon gave up hockey to become a lawyer. Probably makes more money as a lawyer than he would as an athlete. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, Emilio Estevez Emilio's age at the time, he would have probably have been, you know, on the older end of the team at that point. Mm-hmm. Professional sports are very much a young man's game, as they say kind of later in the film. So you really have to hit it big in a very short amount of time if you're going to sustain that money.
But yeah, it kind of reminds him of, Hans reminds Gordon of how much he used to like hockey. Like, it wasn't about winning. It was about playing. It was about being on the ice.
And he gives him new skates and he's like, go put on skates and skate around that crappy pond you found the kids on and you'll get your love of the game back. And he
does.
Does.
He puts the skates on. He starts, you know, skating. He starts remembering the times of playing with his father.
Yeah.
Which is actually a pretty sweet scene.
Yeah, I like it. I kind of wish we'd gotten a little more emotional, you know, core to Gordon and his father and what made him fall in love with the game rather than kids putting dog poop in a handbag, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably why he gave up hockey. Like, with his dad gone, his head was no longer in the game. His heart was no longer in the game.
Yeah. We kind of skipped over the fact that one player in the team refused to play dirty.
Oh yeah, let's backtrack to that. That would be Charlie, Joshua Jackson himself. He refuses to cheat. He even says, I refuse to cheat. You know, it's for him, it is about the game, about playing by the rules.
Yeah, and his mom kind of overhears it and is also like, you know, this isn't cool. And the father of the hall boys is also like, you know, hey, I don't work overtime to pay for my kids to take dives, you know? Yeah. I don't know if he ever goes to apologize to the Hall family. I guess they're not important to him because they don't have the hot mom.
It's a one-off line later in the film where the team no longer trusts Gordon. He says he's going to get the Hall's father to be the coach for the rest of the season.
Yeah, but he does specifically go over to Charlie's house to apologize to him and his mom.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when Charlie starts going like, hey, you're single. My mom's single. You're a total jerk. She seems to be into that. Why don't you date?
Charlie works as a matchmaker. And again, this is another trope of these kind of movies of I need to hook up my single parent.
Yeah. Because no kid could be okay being raised by a single parent.
I think it's more of my parent
Screw
needs a...
Screw you, Hollywood.
I think it's more of my parent needs a life outside of me.
Yeah, it might have been like, my mom has become a helicopter mom and I need some time to myself. Please date her.
As a former teenage boy myself, I can tell you the last thing we want is our mom circling around us.
Once he kind of gets Charlie back on his side... Gordon decides this team needs a sponsor, and since my boss, the Duckman himself, got me into this, Duckman is gonna get me out of this.
And he appeals to his sense of good faith. Hey, you know, these kids need support. You know.
Yeah, you want me to learn? You want to teach me about fair play? It's not fair that they're using magazines as pads, and the other team seems to have, like, millions of dollars behind them.
And he says, you're right. How much is it going to cost? $15,000. No way. All right, so then he appeals to the capitalist in him. It'll be good press.
You know, And that works.
He even says, you can have your own jersey. And that seems to be the thing.
And we see that jersey later. He's, like, mounted it on the wall behind glass and stuff. It's really
he's proud. He's proud of it, at least.
Yeah.
So we get this nice scene of all of the kids goofing around in Hans's store, bashing each other over the head with the helmets and the padding.
Yeah. And they take the goalie out in one of the weirdest scenes and try to teach him that with proper padding, you don't have to be afraid of the puck.
We also get we've kind of skipped over Fulton Reed's portion of the story. We do see him earlier at their first game looking on, and then we see him later save the boys from getting bullied by the Hawks as the boys are ogling Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue.
Yeah.
This is a Disney movie!
I mean, if it wasn't a Disney movie, it would have probably been a Playboy.
True.
You know.
But yeah, so we see that Fulton has a soft spot for the District 5 team. It's just he doesn't play hockey. They start explaining in the store that he's getting scholarships in football. He's already, you know, he's not even in high school yet, and he's already been approved by several colleges on a sports scholarship.
But they will not allow him to play hockey because he might get injured and it might hurt his football career. That's what the boys say.
Which we later find out that is not true. They won't let him play. He doesn't play hockey because he doesn't know how to skate.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that. We're getting ahead here. So, thanks to the grant from Mr. Ducksworth, they're able to rent a local local skating rink and get some hockey time in. And they see two skaters that are really good. Two wannabe figure skaters. The brother and sister of... Tommy and Tammy. Tammy is very good at figure skating. As Tommy isn't so much good at figure skating, but he's able to keep up with his sister. And he says, hey, do you think they want to play with us? And Tammy is a bit hesitant because she doesn't like hockey. And she doesn't know, but Tommy is like, hey, you want me to figure skate, you got to play hockey. Which, yeah. Fair. Like, yeah. if big sister wants little brother to figure skate, little brother, hey, if you want me to play with you, you got to play with me.
Yeah.
And Tammy has a quick... Tammy catches on to hockey really quick by checking her own brother down. What yeah. do I know about hockey? Bing. More than you know.
That one scene, of all the scenes that stayed with me in Mighty Duck, that one scene where they tie the kid to the goal... And just wail on him.
This whole thing is teaching the kids the fundamentals of hockey. Like, yeah, you know, because they didn't have the equipment and they didn't have the space to do proper training, they're actually starting over from square one on how to send the puck to each other, how to hit and receive and all that stuff, how to skate, really.
Yeah, but, and how to communicate with each other as a team.
Yeah.
You know, how to let your team know when you're going to pass to them and where they need to be and how to watch out for them, you know, against the other team.
And, of course, we get the big goalie scene. We talked about funny sound effects. It's the only time I ever got an actual laugh watching this movie of those kind of scenes is the gunshots of using... with the hockey pucks?
Yeah, as they, like, ricochet off the kid, and it's like, pew, like, pew!
Like, yeah. They put their sticks down to shoot, and then you hear a gun cocking, and then gunshots as each and every puck hits Goldberg. And he rightfully is scared. Again, his entire small hockey career, he's been working with no pads, but now that he actually has padding, it doesn't hurt. He even says, bring it on, give me more. I am the goalie.
Yeah, and he very quickly realizes, like, oh, okay, you know, I've got a proper helmet with a proper face shield. I've got pads on. I can take this now. This isn't the scary proposition that I thought it was.
And then they leave him.
Yeah, they just leave him tied to the goal.
Like, they're going to go out to eat. And it's like, guys... This ain't funny.
Yeah. But the whole thing is, you know, you gotta have your sports movie montage. And that's what this is. And they, you know, put eggs down and are using eggs as pucks to learn how to, you know, gently pass things. And,
soft
you
know, hands. Soft hands.
Yeah, soft hands. I don't think you use your hands in hockey, but then again, not a hockey fan, so maybe.
Yeah, Yeah. So anyway, skipping ahead here, Charlie gets dropped off at home by Coach Bombay here, and this is where we get the whole thing with the mom. What's going on?
She sees that Gordon is being nice to her kid, and they're kind of joking around, and you know, she's like, oh, well, if the kid likes him, maybe I can give him a chance.
Yeah, and so we go to the next day. And Gordon's window in his car is completely destroyed by a flying hockey puck from Fulton Reed. And he's not angry about it. He said, do it again. And we get that Fulton Reed can hit a goal 1 out of 5 times with his powerful shot. But he doesn't want to join the team because he doesn't know how to skate. And
For a rollerblade montage.
Through the mall. You and I have been to this mall. This is the Mall of America.
Oh, did they film it in the Mall of America?
It looks like the Mall of America. It looks like the 90s era Mall of America.
Yeah, I mean, I never went until much recently, but yeah.
So, Gordon Bombay revealed the new uniform with the duck logo.
They don't want to be a duck. Ducks are awful. They don't even have teeth.
And tells them ducks fly together. When you mess with one duck, you mess with the others.
The thing is that I think that maybe the writer of this movie has never been near a duck because ducks are terrifying. You ever eaten a sandwich near a pond?
I think it's coming from the brain of a kid. You know, like they straight up mentioned Donald and Daisy.
Well, no, but Gordon's response. Mm-hmm. You know, the kid's not understanding that ducks are terrifying, but, like, an adult should know, like, if you don't understand how terrifying a duck is, you've never been near a duck. The only thing more terrifying than a duck is a goose. Geese are like ducks on meth. Geese are like the Florida Man of ducks.
It's like, untitled goose game, right?
Yeah, if you're near a goose, they're gonna be a jerk to you, and they're gonna be terrifying, and they're gonna dive bomb you. But ducks are like that, just, you know, not dialed up to 11. You know, they're like at about an 8. You know.
Anyway,
ducks are awful.
Ducks are awful. Ducks are Richards.
Yeah.
Anyway. Now that they are the Ducks, they have their first game as the Ducks against another team, the Cardinals. And Bombay tries to get their spirits up, say, District 5 was a terrible team, but the Ducks are undefeated. And they...
Which, you know, I mean, there's that lawyer going into him. Yeah.
And as a bit of intimidation, they let Fulton Reed go during the opening practice. And the Cardinals are scared poopless by the force in which Fulton is hitting these pucks and how they ricochet off the rest of the arena.
Yeah, he destroys several parts of the arena, including, like, demolishing some safety glass. Absolutely scares the Cardinals, but as Gordon notes, he only hit 1 out of 5 shots.
Yeah.
So he's not a precise player, but you definitely want to duck if he's shooting. Probably, the other meaning of the word duck.
Probably
duck and cover.
Probably why they have him state of football. He's defense.
Yeah.
So anyway, this is the part where we get the hockey puck through the helmet.
Ah, yeah.
So because they know how to play now. The one player starts to block the shot and ends up blocking the shot with his head. And the puck...
It does help them win the game, but the kid's bell gets rung pretty hard.
That's a concussion.
Yeah.
But yeah, and the Ducks actually win the game because they actually know how to play now. So the Ducks are on a roll. Even though they've lost most of their games, a couple of the teams have... bowed out of the season due to illness. They say one entire team caught the measles, so they're out, which means they have a chance to make the playoffs.
Yeah. And now we get the other twist of the movie. In a conversation with Hans, it turns out that if Gordon was playing today, Gordon would have been in District 5. The Ducks district, and not in the district of the Hawks. They're adjoining districts. They share a border, and apparently the border was redrawn, and because of this, the Hawks' star player, Adam Banks, now technically lives in District 5 and is supposed to be playing with the Ducks and not the Hawks.
This is a subplot for the rest of the movie. He takes it directly to the Hawks coach, saying, according to the district, Banks has to play with us.
Yeah, the league, he brings the league into it, and they send a very official guy with a clipboard down to be like, nope, these are the lines. Your house is now technically in District 5. If he doesn't play for the Ducks, he doesn't play at all.
And if you have him on your team forfeits every game for the rest of the season. And yeah. Knowing how much this coach wants to win, he can't... playing to the fact that the coach wants to win all the time. Yeah. So you have a choice to make. And they have a conversation...
Give up one of your best players, or...
Give up the season.
Give up the season, yeah.
And this causes another conversation to happen to them, but giving up his star player to be on a team full of losers. To which Gordon says, yeah, they're losers. They don't deserve to live. Is that how you view them? But the kids don't hear the entire conversation. They only hear half the conversation where they call them losers. Another trope of these kind of movies.
So now the kids are like, we won't play with Banks because he's a Hawk.
And we won't play for Gordon because he thinks we're losers.
Yeah. And the only kids that stick around for the next game are Charlie and Fulton, who've actually been helped directly by Gordon. And they have to forfeit their next game. But as Hans tells us in his creepy, I pay way too much attention to Pee Wee hockey, really, all but the bottom two teams, there are so few teams that all but the bottom two teams go to the playoffs. So all they have to do is beat one other team and they're in the playoffs.
After all of this happens, Gordon and Charlie are eating at a restaurant, which Charlie's mom actually works at. So there's a little bit more of the relationship developing between those two characters.
And Charlie straight up says, "You need to date my mom. She deserves a nice guy. She keeps going for jerks. I don't know why he thinks Gordon is a nice guy, because he's shown again and again that he's a jerk." But he's like, she finds guys, then they discover she's got a kid, and they dump her. And I'm sick of seeing it happen. You at least seem to be okay with me.
Yeah.
Go date my mom.
Also, the fact that you're our coach, I don't want to work for another coach. You created the Ducks, and you're stuck with us.
Yeah, Gordon is ready to give up, as we said before, and let Mr. Hall take over, and Charlie's like, nope, no deal. You are nothing. Gordon gets a call from his boss, and he's called into the office, and his boss is like, two things. Your community service is over. You don't have to be a coach anymore. And two, I have made a deal because it turns out that he's really good friends with Mr. Banks's father. And he made a deal with the league so
Adam can play with the Hawks for the rest of the season.
Yeah, they're going to redistrict before the next season so that the Banks's house will be in the correct district. Cake eater.
Yep.
So, the whole deal has been decided. The only thing that's holding it up is that Gordon has to agree to it and officially remove his petition.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Gordon goes, like, no. And he makes a really bizarre speech that I do not like.
The way he describes it is that you told me to do this hockey thing for me to learn teamwork and to play by the rules. Well, the rules say that kid is in our district, and I'm standing up for my team. This is exactly what you taught me to learn, and all of a sudden you're going to punish me for it.
That part is correct, but then he goes off to, being on a team is something you earn. It's not just something given to you, and you didn't earn the right to be a Duck, Mr. Ducksworth, and, you know. No. In this instance, a team is not something you earn. A team is where you happen to live on the side of an arbitrarily given line.
Yeah, that I will give you. They even said the way the districts are drawn, that's the team you're on.
Banks is not part of the Ducks because he's, like, good. He worked at it. He tried out and he made the team and he fought against all... Like, no, his house just happens to be in the... Which, at the same time, you wonder, like, it just seems that the way these teams are done, that it's just like, well, you live in the area, you get to be on the team. We may not put you on, like, the first string players. You know, you might spend a lot of time on the sidelines, but you're on the team because you live here.
Yeah.
And it kind of makes me wonder, like, what it's like for the Hawks, because it seems like they're technically playing by the same rules, but maybe the coach just berates the kids who aren't good enough and they just decide they don't want to play hockey anymore.
Well, he even says later in the movie, if we don't win the championship, none of you are coming back next season.
Yeah, which seems bizarre because it does seem that at least the rules the Ducks are playing by, do you want to play hockey? Do you live in District 5? Congratulations, you're now a member of the Mighty Ducks.
Mm-hmm. But let's get past that to the big...
No, I will never get past it. It's a huge gaping error in this movie. I do not like it. Anyway,
so Duxworth and Bombay have this confrontation, is that if you don't drop your claim, you're fired. Are you really willing to lose your job over a bunch of punk kids? Are you willing to fire me over a bunch of punk kids? Go clean out your desk.
I mean, Gordon's kind of right. Duxworth does not react like a normal person. First of all, he sidelines his best lawyer over a rather minor, legally speaking, offense. Mm-hmm. You can debate the ethics of it, but legally, that's a minor infraction. And then he fires him over something that, I mean, it like, all you have to do is just be like, dude, I'll give you a raise. Just that, you know. But
if,
yeah.
If it had been a situation where Gordon quit rather than being fired, it would have probably would have been a better scene.
Yeah, but it points out that this is not the way business works. Anyway, but yeah, Gordon is without a job, but he's still coaching the team. And I guess Duckworth is still giving them money for equipment and rink time and stuff? I don't know.
Yeah. Contract, I guess. Meanwhile, yeah. The kids have started a fight with each other. The entire District 5 Duck team apparently are in the same class, even though...
Which is weird. They're all different ages.
Yes, so they're all in the same class. And as the teacher has to leave the classroom for a moment to speak with the principal, a fight breaks out between the entire team. As they, you know, they're arguing over Coach Bombay. And they go, Charlie only likes Bombay because he's dating his mom. And
You take that back about my mom! Yeah. That completely innocuous comment that is also completely and totally true because I set them up. I don't know why that's a fight, but movie.
Don't talk about a boy's mama like that.
And then the principal comes in to break it up, and they all quack at her, because apparently the only thing that can bring a team together is hatred of a mean adult.
I can understand this scene, because it's happened to me before, where I have had disagreements with other school children, and fights have happened, and it just ends up, you get those aggressions out, and then everything is fine. It's not the right way to go about it, but it happens.
If you want to see the 90s kid power in action, yeah. It's their interaction with the principal. Because the principal is such a thin, evil character. It's just a really severe-looking woman who comes in and screams at them for no reason.
So yeah, the Bombay comes to the school to get his team so they can go to practice. And the principal herself says, yeah, they're in detention. All of them? All of them. So... Gordon talks to the kids, saying, hey, you didn't hear the whole conversation. I was putting you guys up. And basically gets the team back together, and they're all on the same page again, and they're gonna play the game.
All we gotta do is beat one team, and we're in the playoffs, because this
league
makes
no sense.
Getting
dressed and ready to play, in comes Adam Banks, who is now part of the team, which sours the rest of the team, because... he's a hawk. He's a cake eater, as he's being called.
But Adam says he wants to play with the Ducks rather than not play at all. Like, he's in it for the love of the game. He has no real loyalty to the Hawks. His dad is the one pushing for the Hawks. Like, his brother was a hawk, and I was a hawk, and, you know. Yeah, and Adam's like, I don't really care what team I'm on. I just want to play some hockey, you know? Like,
and the team just doesn't accept him because, hey, you may wear the uniform, but you're not a duck.
Yeah, you've got to earn your way onto this team by living on the side of an arbitrary... I really hate that plot point. Anyway.
They start playing, and throughout the game, Adam is open. He is completely open in every time, and they just refuse to... pass to him because, again, they don't want him on their team. But eventually, Bombay is just yelling a pass to Adam, pass to Adam. And when they eventually do, he gets the game-winning shot.
Yeah, so now they're in the playoffs. So we get another montage of them, like, playing and winning in the playoffs. And finally, they're in the championship against the Hawks.
Yep.
Because, of course, this is where it was leading, because this is a sports movie, and all sports movies are exactly the same.
We skipped ahead because Gordon and Charlie's mom go on a date.
Yeah, they go on a date. She doesn't really, she's really worried because she's had her heart broken and she doesn't think that her and Charlie can go through another guy just like coming into their lives and being a father for a day and then checking out. And he's like, hey, I really like you and I really like Charlie and I'm not going anywhere. This is a really, really boring relationship that makes absolutely no point in the movie. It doesn't matter. Let's move on.
We get this weird combination of the flashback from the beginning of the movie and the intro to the game where the Ducks and the Hawks are staring each other down. There's this dramatic music playing while the crowd is singing the national anthem.
Yeah. But it's weird. By this point, the Mighty Ducks have a fan base. There's a whole bunch of people in the stands going quack, quack, quack. I mean,
we're in Ducks merch.
And we will either duck you or quack you. I think they said quack because the other one sounds a little suggestive. Yeah, it's really hard to hear in the actual film as presented on Disney Plus. So. And that line is not in the closed caption. So if you're depending on the closed caption, you would never know that line was in the movie in the first place.
Anyway, so the game has started. The Hawks are cheering win, 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 while the Ducks are chanting quack, 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 quack. The last 20 minutes of this movie is the final game.
Because it's a sports movie, and that's what the final 20 minutes of all sports movies are. The Hawks are determined to play dirty. The coach is like, you get out there, you check them into the boards, you mess them up, you injure them, you take them out of the game. He specifically sends them out after Banks.
Because he was part of their team and now he isn't.
Yeah, he's a traitor to the team or whatever. Banks gets the goal that ties them. You know, they're behind for most of the game. They pull back and Banks gets the tie goal. But they take him out of the game. You know, he gets it right as they check him and he takes a hard fall and possibly breaks his shoulder. It's kind of, they say something about x-rays, but that he's going to be fine. So it doesn't seem to have been a head injury, but
there's a nice little moment here where it looks like someone that was Banks' friend on the team is checking on him. He's like, what did you do? And the other kid looks at him, my job. This is Pee-wee hockey!
Possibly the worst line in the movie. I laughed so hard at that because the movie wants us to take it seriously. And it's just like this kid is suddenly quoting a gangster film or something. It's like, what did you do? I threw him in the river with semen shoes. Like, it's such a silly line and I hated it. I laughed, but it was really one of my few genuine laughs during this movie just because of the absurdity of this like 12-year-old being like, I did my job.
So with the tie game, Adam's out of the game. They decide that they're going to take Goldberg out of the game, take out the goalie, put Fulton in as the extra man, and let Fulton do his thing. But Fulton is scared because he can only hit 1 in 5, and they're asking him to hit 1 in 1. But they hype him up. Hey, you know, hey, you can do it. Soft hands.
Soft hands. Soft hands.
And he listens to them, and he actually hits the puck, which is so fast and so fast and so hard that the other players are literally ducking out of the way of the puck as it blasts right through the goal.
They're finally go back and forth in this final little bit with the Hawks ahead and the Ducks tying and the Hawks pull ahead and the Ducks tie.
There is one moment in this. Every Mighty Ducks movie has this one moment that just will not fly in an actual game of hockey. As Tammy does a little pirouette ice skating move in the middle of the game.
And it just distracts all the Hawks players because they're like, why is she doing a twirl on the ice? And then her brother just comes along and like passes her the puck and she's right into the goal. And they're like, hey, you faked this out.
And then they hit her. It hit Tammy. Knock her down, which apparently Fulton has a thing for her, so he goes after the team. He goes after the Hawks, throwing them over the railings, which gets him kicked off the team or kicked out of the game, which is what the Hawks wanted. They wanted Fulton out of the game.
Yeah, but now it's down to Charlie. They send him in. They're tied again. The clock is counting down. And Charlie goes to take a shot, and one of the Hawks just puts his stick out and, like, clotheslines Charlie's leg.
Yep. As the timer runs out, so that's a foul. That's a free shot.
So we're back to the beginning of the movie. Here's the one kid in the championship. It's a tied game, and it's all down to a penalty shot. And Gordon says Charlie should take the shot. You know, anybody who was out there on the ice can take the shot, but Gordon says that he believes in Charlie, and even more, he believes in Charlie win or lose.
Which is something he was never told.
Yeah, he's still gonna like Charlie, even if the game doesn't matter. They made it to the championships. That's enough of a win.
Well, from the worst team of the league to second place isn't so bad.
Yeah, I mean, that's already an amazing, you know, underdog story. They don't have to win the game, but Charlie deserves to take the shot. And what we kind of skipped over is that Gordon has been teaching him kind of privately. He thinks Charlie's a really good player and that he could, you know, really stick with it if he wanted to.
Even teaching Charlie Gordon's signature move of the triple deke.
Whatever that is. But he tells Charlie, you know, just go out there, try your best. Whatever happens, I'm still going to be here. And Charlie does. He goes out there, and of course it's a sports movie, so he does the game-winning move and makes the goal.
And the Ducks win the championship.
Yeah. We kind of skipped over the one signature move of the Ducks, which is the flying V.
Oh, yeah. So they it's mentioned early when they become the Ducks that the Ducks fly together in the flying V, and it's a beautiful sight. It is. If you've ever seen Ducks fly in that V, it is a beautiful sight.
Yeah, so they come up with a move on the ice, which is, you know, they've got one guy in the back with the puck. The others form a V around to clear the ice. And then as they approach the goal, the player that's been moving the puck down the ice shoots it forward. And the person at the front of the V shoots it into the goal. It looks really cool on the ice. I don't know if it would be a legit tactic in actual hockey.
I don't think so.
Yeah, but it looks pretty on film.
Yeah, it does. I mean, that's kind of the whole point of this thing. As long as it looks good on film, it doesn't matter if it's legal or not. But yeah, the Ducks win the championship. Everyone's happy. They're losing the title. Everyone's chanting, Ducks, 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 Ducks. And under normal circumstances, this is kind of where the movie would end. Most sports movies end here. But we do get a kind of a little bit of a coda here, as we mentioned it earlier that one of the NHL guys is going to give Gordon a tryout in the minor leagues. So that's what he's going to do. Again, it's not like he's a lawyer anymore.
Yeah.
And he says, this is crazy. This is, you know, I'm going to be up against people half my age. But he's going to go do it. You know, might as well try it. If it's successful, it's successful. If not, hey, he's going to come back either way. He even says, I'm going to come back either way and be your coach next season.
And then he doesn't, because I don't think he was in the sequel.
He's in Mighty Ducks 2, he makes a cameo.
Okay.
Yeah, he is in Mighty Ducks 2, he makes a cameo in Mighty Ducks 3.
Yeah, he kisses the mom in front of the whole team, and everybody's like, ooh, you know.
And Charlie is, like, completely dumbfounded as this is happening, even though he's been trying to hook them up for the whole movie.
Yeah, I don't know why he's surprised.
Maybe surprised that it worked?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But yeah, that's where we end the movie. They're the champions now. Gordon's going to go try to be a hockey player. Credits roll. There is no cool, inspiring song.
There's a song. It's not very cool or inspiring.
Much like the rest of the movie. in summation, what do you think? Does the Mighty Ducks have the magic?
I'm going to say, yeah, it does. There's something in this movie that's... There is a lot of it that comes down to nostalgia, especially some of the jokes that are really dated.
Mr. Tuesday, the Tuesday, he thinks there's magic.
I do. There's something in this movie. I'm going to say that there is a little bit of magic. I'm going to say, yeah.
The interesting thing is that when this movie came out, it hit like a meteor. This movie came out of nowhere. It was like, oh, Disney's going to release a weird movie about hockey. And it kind of came out, if I remember correctly, it came out at a time when nothing else was playing, which is why I ended up seeing this in the theater, because this is 100% not my type of film. So I kind of think that it may have come out just when there was nothing else out. I'm going to say... Of all the movies in the world, this is certainly one of them. For me, this movie is like the beige paint of movies. You know what you're going to get? It's serviceable. If you're looking for beige paint, this is certainly a beige paint you can do. But it's serviceable. Do you want a movie? Do you want a sports movie? This is a sports movie. It's not awful. It's, to me, not outstanding. It's a serviceable film. You know, it's... How do you feel about beige as a color? Like, you know, it's a stand-in. Sure. So, magic... Probably not for me, but I can see if you're a sports movie person, this is certainly better than a lot of sports movies I've seen. Neutral magic from me. It's not lacking magic, but it's not full of it either. So, eh.
Eh. All right, that's fair. Not the first time we've had a split decision on this show.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's fine. I respect it as a film, you know? It gets the job done. As beige paint goes, it's certainly good. It'll stick to your walls.
Alright, so let's... I guess that's the last we can say on the original Mighty Ducks film. Let's move on to next week. Well, we've talked about ducks for the last 2 weeks in one shape or form. I think it's time to talk about the ancestor of the duck. And that would be the dinosaur. We've been wanting to do this for a while. It's on Disney Plus now. We are going to do the TV series Dinosaurs.
Yeah, I don't know if it's officially Jim Henson's Dinosaurs, but yeah, the Henson Company Dinosaurs.
And we will talk to you all then. Bye.
Bye.
Don't let the magic stop here.
Join our conversation online on Facebook at Rewatching the Magic.
Twitter at Rewatch the Magic.
And of course, new episodes every week at rewatchingthemagic.podbean.com.
Remember, the magic is for everyone.
It only stops if you let it.